Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
I don't know if I'm ready. I have story after story after story today. Good afternoon, Dan Mandis on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. I'll get through it all. One of the banes of my existence is that I have everything printed out. I don't use a computer really at all to read anything except when something breaks. And I've got just stacks and stacks of paper. China. This is a huge victory for President Trump as China has now decided to impose new sanctions on North Korea. So this is, yes, indeed, a very big deal. Talking about unmasking, I've got to tell you, it seems like the former Obama administration or the former presidential administration of President Obama, whatever you want to say, those folks, Samantha Power and company, they are being unmasked on a daily basis. The more we find out about the last days of the Obama administration, the more our suspicions are being proven true. And that is that the Obama administration, in the final days, one, I believe that they knew, first of all, and I was talking with David Zanotti about this, I think that even before the evening of November 8th, we all suspected that Hillary was going to win. I think the Obama administration knew that Hillary was going to lose, and so they started immediately, and they were continuing this process of collecting as much data as they could on, at the time, candidate Trump, and then as President-elect Trump, all the way up until really the day that President Trump was sworn in. I mean, the level of quote-unquote unmasking that this Samantha Power was doing in the days leading up to President Trump's inauguration, it is absolutely stunning. So we'll get into that story as well. We have some other stories. Why are kids today putting off life's rites of passage, like, for example, dating and driving? It's one of my favorite stories of the day, and it's got it coming up here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. So here's the big headline. This just breaking in the last probably half hour or so. China's banks reportedly going to halt business with North Korea, comma, as South Korea sends $8 million to North Korea. That's a little confusing. Well, let's get into the details here. First of all, we know over the past couple of days that President Trump, in his speech to the UN, literally challenging the United Nations to do something to curtail North Korea's threatening activities. Well, China has finally responded. Now, there's a lot of folks that are going to try and spin this as not a victory for President Trump. But you remember, even during the campaign, President Trump, then candidate Trump, over and over said that you need to utilize China to do something against North Korea so that we can reel in North Korea. So China is responding. Now, the big question is, will this have an effect on North Korea? But here's the story. This is from Fox News. It's out there on Bloomberg and every place else. North Korea learning this week Chinese banks will no longer do business with North Korea. It is the strongest sign yet. Pressure from the Trump administration to choke off funding to the rogue nation is working. Chinese banks received the document Monday stating they should halt financial services and loans to new and existing North Korean customers as a result of strict United Nations sanctions passed earlier this month, a source telling Reuters earlier today. Our bank is fulfilling our international obligations and implementing United Nations sanctions against North Korea. As such, they say, we refuse to handle any individual loans connected to North Korea. It's a document that China put out to the banks there in China, telling them basically don't do business with North Korea. The move comes after repeated calls from the Trump administration for China to help cut the flow of money to Kim Jong-un's dictatorship. We know this is obviously an effort to cripple their missile and nuclear programs. We know that China and Russia both agreed to recent UN sanctions against North Korea, which included a ban on natural gas liquids and other such materials. But we know that Trump has been very specific in calling out China as it relates to their business with North Korea. We know that North Korea and China do a lot of business together. Now, the question I would have is, and I'm hoping to get an expert from the Heritage Foundation on this, is, okay, as we find out more and more about this deal, the question is this. Will there be or are there any loopholes that will enable these banks to not necessarily comply with the sanctions? Because that's what we've been seeing all along, and that's why North Korea continues to do what they're doing. My own prediction on this, by the way, North Korea will have some sort of a test, some sort of a ballistic missile test, some sort of a test here in the next couple of days to answer what China is doing. And that does a couple of things for North Korea and also, by the way, for China. One, it will give North Korea the ability to say to President Trump and China, we're going to do whatever it is that we're going to do, regardless of the sanctions, because our people may be starving, but doggone it, we're going to continue with our tests regardless. But what would a test do for China if North Korea decided to have some sort of a ballistic missile test or whatever it is? What that would do is that would signal to President Trump and for China, it's North Korea telling President Trump, you can bully China all you want, but we're still going to do what we're going to do. And in a way, that could let China off the hook. I would say that would be a nice attempt by North Korea, but I think we all know, because we've been talking about this for a long time now, that China certainly is influential against North Korea. Now, this is interesting because a lot of folks are screaming up and down. Here we have China finally coming to the table and telling their banks to halt business with North Korea. But why is South Korea sending North Korea $8 million? South Korea, on the same day that we find out that China is going to have their banks halt business with North Korea, South Korea on Thursday, today, decided to resume humanitarian aid to North Korea to help kids and pregnant women. They have not yet determined when to provide the $8 million worth of assistance amid tensions created between North Korea's and South Korea, their nuclear and missile tests, etc. So yeah, this is interesting. I think what it does do is it tells you that, one, South Korea, as frustrated as they have been with North Korea, they are understanding that their frustrations are with Kim Jong-un and not with the starving children and pregnant women of North Korea. But yeah, some folks are saying this is confusing. Some South Korean officials fear the new aid will send a mixed signal to international leaders. See, I don't think so. I mean, if there is some sort of a way for that $8 million to end up into the pockets of Kim Jong-un and his military program, then yeah, I would have an issue with it. But the experts are saying, no, that's not possible. Some of these lawmakers there in South Korea say that the announcement is badly timed. This one guy, Sun Kim-ju, a lawmaker and spokesman of the opposition People's Party, telling the Associated Press the international community is strengthening sanctions and pressure against North Korea, and even the president there of South Korea is in the United States to strengthen international coordination against the North Korean problem. He says, if our government contradicts itself and beats to a different beat, it won't be able to gain the approval of its own people, let alone other countries. That's a very political way to put it. And of course, this guy is from, I guess, the opposition party there in South Korea. Now, we do know the new president of South Korea has been extending olive branches to Kim Jong-un, North Korea, for quite some time, and Kim Jong-un has responded with rocket tests. Now, the president of South Korea previously said humanitarian aid, the $8 million, and political issues should be handled separately. Now, South Korea stopped this aid back in January of 2016 after Pyongyang conducted its fourth nuclear test. But after meeting with ministries and civilian experts, the president of South Korea decided to resume aid to help North Korean kids and pregnant women. They say the money is intended to support programs run by the United Nations, the Children's Fund there, and the United Nations Food Program. And what they're saying is that the assistance does not include cash. So I guess it's, what, $8 million worth of food and water or whatever else it is that they need there. They say there is realistically no possibility the North could use this money, or this support, I should say, to support its military. About 18 million of the 25 million people who live in North Korea experience food shortages, with a high child and mortality rates, according to the United Nations, which is why South Korea is doing what they can to help those people. Because listen, in North Korea, we know that for Kim Jong-un, it's all about him. It's all about his rockets. It's all about his nuclear tests. And it's all about his image, his military image, and his portrayal of strength to the people of North Korea. Doesn't sound like this guy necessarily cares about the starving women and children in North Korea. As long as they all line up for the parades and applaud the missiles and all the military equipment when they rumble through the streets of Pyongyang. So I, for one, and listen, you know, I'm a harsh critic of North Korea, and I'm a harsh critic of anybody who supports North Korea, but I think this is different. This isn't like Russia accepting the slave labor that North Korea exports into Russia. This isn't that. This is the South Koreans supporting the starving women, pregnant women, and the children there in North Korea. Now, President Trump, of course, he's been chiming in today. North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles threatens the entire world with unthinkable loss of human life. I love North Korea's language, by the way. Listen to this. North Korea's foreign minister, Ri Yong-ho, fired back on Wednesday, telling reporters that President Trump's threats were, quote, the sounds of a dog barking. I don't know. I just find it funny. They're always this colorful language that the North Koreans have. He says there's a saying that goes, even when dogs bark, the parade goes on. Rice said, it would be a dog's dream if Trump intended to scare us with the sound of a dog barking. Rice then said he felt sorry for Trump's aides when asked about the Rocket Man comment. The U.S. is expected to announce new actions against North Korea on Thursday. I think something just, Beelzebub, if you could, I think that something came across just as I was literally walking into the studio that President Trump had signed executive orders targeting North Korea's trading partners. That was breaking news from Fox News, and they say that it is developing, but I'll read it right off my phone. President Trump signed an executive order Thursday targeting North Korea's trading partners, calling it a powerful new tool amid aimed at isolating and denuclearizing the North Korean regime. So if more details on that become available, Bell, that would be very much appreciated. So there is a lot going on in the world of President Trump, and we'll keep you updated on all the latest as it continues to develop. But that is a very big deal. And as I said, that is a huge victory for President Trump. And you'll notice that for President Trump, a lot of these victories are coming on the international stage. I mean, these victories at the UN, and for example, being able to pressure China to do what it is that they're doing with their banks and telling the banks, do not do business with North Korea. We'll notice that Congress isn't involved in any of these victories, right? So the battle over health care continues as well. We'll get into that. But straight ahead, we will talk about this, what I would call this incredible story of Samantha Power, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, was unmasking, they say, at such a rapid pace in the final months of the Obama administration that she averaged more than one request for every working day in 2016. And even sought information in the days leading up to President Trump's inauguration. Multiple sources close to the matter are telling Fox News. Now, you've got to realize, and unfortunately, I don't have time to get into everything that I have to talk about as it relates to this particular story, but this is all part of a pattern within the Obama administration. You remember Evelyn Farkas, somebody who worked in the Trump administration, when she literally admitted that she wanted to get folks, quote unquote, on the Hill to obtain as much intelligence on the incoming administration as they possibly could. We also know that President Obama changed the way the wiretapped intelligence is shared within the intelligence communities, making it far easier for that intelligence to be leaked to the mainstream media. Ultimately, the Obama administration has been and was laying the groundwork and collecting all of this intelligence to eventually either hamstring President Trump or impeach him. We know that that was their goal from the very beginning. We know that the Obama folks, and we know that his entire administration, they were absolutely obsessed with collecting as much intel on President Trump, and everybody's so obsessed with collusion between President Trump, then candidate Trump, and the Russians. For the love of Pete, man, let's talk about collusion between Obama, the intelligence communities, and his partners in the mainstream media. It goes on and on and on. Oh, let's not forget, of course, James Comey leaking his own memos and notes on his meetings with President Trump as well. And so we know that over and over again, we are seeing one example after another of the former President Obama and his administration doing everything they could to collect evidence and, as I said, ultimately either hamstring or provide enough information for eventually at that time soon-to-be President Trump to be impeached. And so when we talk about Samantha Power, and I'll give you some more details on this, probably at about 1235, 1236, when I go through all of the different things that the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations did as, I guess, part of her role as the ambassador, although a lot of people are saying, myself included, well, if you're the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, why were you unmasking at such a rapid pace? But there are more details I want to get into. 1221 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.
I'm Pamela Furr. Closing arguments in the Holly Bobo case, and NFL players send a letter to the league hoping to get more recognition for social activism. I'll explain. It's coming up at 12:30 on WTN.
12:27 Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Mandis Show on a very busy day. Lawrence O'Donnell. Have you heard what happened to Lawrence O'Donnell? This is a guy who is a Trump hater to the absolute core. And he just went bat crap crazy during a recent broadcast. Now, here's basically what happened is he's on the air, and I'm sure you've seen the video. I think I put a link to it on the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page. Lawrence O'Donnell is an MSNBC host, and he's on the air. And while he's on the air, things just went absolutely crazy. Things just started going out of control. And so as the camera is rolling and he's live, and of course they have all this on tape, he just starts to lose it. I mean, listen to some of this.
I don't know why I bother to say how to cut the slots when you don't do it. So now I have to chase those stupid god entrails that you allowed him to stick out there. Jeez. I told you why I wanted those words cut. Yep. There's a reason these words have to be cut precisely. Right. And everyone in the audience is going to complain about what that guy just said is absolutely right.
Now, I played that cut in the beginning of this conversation because everybody else, I believe, is playing all the other stuff. And I will play the other stuff too. But the reason I played that particular cut first is because that is Lawrence O'Donnell. This is a pretty much of an ignored part of this 8-minute rant. But that's Lawrence O'Donnell complaining about the way one of the audio pieces was cut. And if you listen to what he said, if you listen to how he said it, it almost sounds like he's complaining about the way the audio was cut because he was trying to and is trying to present a certain narrative over there on MSNBC. And by the staff and the producers not cutting the words, as he says, precisely the way that he wanted, his narrative was presented in a way that he did not want. And it just makes me think about what's happening over at MSNBC. Are they taking the words of whoever it was that he was talking about out of context? If by leaving those words in, it's presenting a different context and a different narrative than what Lawrence O'Donnell and the folks over there at a very liberal MSNBC were trying to portray to the audience. That was a fascinating part, and I was trying to figure out exactly when this actual episode aired to see if I could figure out, okay, what exactly is it that was left in as far as the comments from a newsmaker or whatever it is that had Lawrence O'Donnell so upset? Is this proof that MSNBC, in directing the producers to take out certain words of a soundbite, are they trying to present a certain narrative, perhaps to make President Trump look bad? By leaving the words in, he does not look as bad. It's an interesting thought. Anyway, we'll have more on that and a whole lot more coming up here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. 1238 Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Manda Show. Well, North Korea under the gun yet again. China banks reportedly going to halt business with North Korea. Want to welcome on in our old friend, Peter Brooks from the Heritage Foundation, also the Boston Herald. Peter, always appreciate you being on with us, and I know short notice today. Thank you very much. Just here in the last hour or so, we have found out that North Korea learned that this week the Chinese banks will no longer do business with them. And this, of course, on the heels of President Trump's speech at the United Nations, although it sounds like, I'm trying to put the timeline together, it sounds like China had already made the decision to do this before President Trump made his speech. But we all knew and we all know that President Trump has been asking China, pleading with China, warning China they needed to help out with this North Korea situation. Do we know how much this will affect North Korea's economy?
Well, if it's true, I have not seen the Chinese statement yet on this, but assuming that the information we're getting is accurate, it could be very consequential. A lot of the banking that North Korea does goes through Chinese banks. And although North Korea doesn't do a tremendous amount, like many other modern countries internationally in terms of international trade, they still need to use hard currency, move currency to undertake a transaction. So yeah, this could be very significant, Dan, if the Chinese actually implement it.
See, and Peter, that was gonna be my next question. The Fox News story says Chinese banks receive a document Monday stating they should halt financial services and loans to new and existing North Korean customers as a result of strict UN sanctions passed earlier this month. But one of the questions that I posed in my monologue is twofold. One is, okay, so will there really be any teeth behind this? What will China do to make sure this happens? And are there any loopholes within this new policy in China so that North Korea could still get the money that they need and North Korean businesses can get the money that they need while on the surface making it look like China is complying with the requests and demands of President Trump?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I'm wondering. You know, I haven't seen the Chinese announcement. Monday was several days ago, so that's interesting. I've not seen a public announcement about it. The question is that it always comes down, whether you're talking about sanctions, which it could include banking sanctions. The question is how faithfully are they implemented? Also, could North Korea turn to others? What about Russia? I don't think they're doing as much in terms of the Chinese, but North Korea could shift things to Russia or Iranian banks or other things. I mean, this is they are masters of smuggling and front companies and shell companies and working around sanctions for many years. So, I mean, I want to say this is good news. I mean, if this is the case, this is a victory for the Trump administration. Now the challenge, as with any policy, is the implementation of it.
Well, and you just brought up an interesting question, Peter, and I think you and I have spoken about this before. And that is that Vladimir Putin has been waiting in the wings for just this scenario to play out because Putin has been trying to get more of a foothold into North Korea. So Putin is basically waiting in the wings to take up where China could be leaving off, right?
There's a possibility there. You know, the Soviets were closer with North Korea during the Cold War than the Chinese were. This was the case in many ways, and the North Koreans have played the Chinese and the Russians off one another. But after the end of the Cold War, when Russia stopped providing aid, it was no longer a satellite state. They lost influence in North Korea. Now, most of North Koreans' weaponry is Russian. And so the Russians wouldn't mind selling them that. In the past, the North Koreans, the Russians were building North Korea's nuclear reactor, the one that got into trouble. That was a nuclear reactor. I mean, the Russians only export certain things. Arms is one of them. Nuclear energy is another. And oil and natural gas. There's not much else coming out of Russia. So Russia's always interested. And, you know, Russia also, you know, one of the reasons they were interested in North Korea is that they were able to balance China a little bit, right? They've got this, you know, country on China's border. So Russia does have interest. And, of course, Russia borders North Korea. Most people don't realize how big Russia is. It goes from Europe all the way to Asia. The major city of Vladivostok is a Russian city in the Russian Far East. And Russia has a small border with North Korea. So they have interests out there as well. So I'm not sure what sort of role Russia will play here. You know, this may have gone to the point where people really feel like they do have to go further than they have in the past to prevent the possibility of a conflict, because once again, Russia would be affected by this, as well as China and others.
Peter Brooks joining us from the Heritage Foundation and also the Boston Herald. And Peter, the other question I would have is, and again, this just came out in the past half hour or so, President Trump has signed an executive order targeting North Korea's trading partners. And I know that North Korea does have an economy and does have trade agreements with various other nations outside of China and Russia. I think Saudi Arabia might be in there as well. Is it realistic for the president to target these other nations? And do you think it'll have any kind of an impact on whether or not these nations do business with North Korea? Because I guess the question I would have for you is, is President Trump trying to force these other nations to decide whether they're going to do business with the United States and our massive economy or North Korea's economy, which is obviously considerably smaller?
I think that's what it is. It's like, if you're supporting North Korea by banking with them, then you can't bank in the United States. And we are still the world's largest economy. So people have to make those sort of choices. Now, once again, there will be efforts to mask these sort of transactions, because my sense is that people will make money off of North Korea. But I think that's really what it comes down to. It's not necessarily the countries. It could be central banks. I haven't seen the executive order yet, Dan, but it could be central banks. It could also be commercial banks. And this is one of the things that they did to Iran. They went after international banking. You know, if you're going to bank with Iran, you can't bank with the United States. Mm. And, it brought Iran to the negotiating table. So the challenge is once again, implementation, worries about leakage where they might, people will try to circumvent it. But it's tightening the screws a little bit further.
Now, one of the things that you probably don't want me to ask you this, so I'll ask you from a historical perspective.
So you'll ask me anyway, right?
I will, yes. I'm known to do that. People will love me for that. No, the question would be, North Korea, if I'm not mistaken, they have a history of whenever they have new sanctions implemented against them, then they have a tendency to react with another test.
Right.
So do you see that perhaps happening in the next few days?
Yeah, but I don't see them as related, Dan. I mean, they test anyway, whether
that's
new
true.
Sanctions or not. And I think you and I have talked about it. They are committed. They will blame the sanctions for their testing, but they are testing because they plan to have a reliable nuclear weapons and ballistic missile program, and you need to test to do that. So they're using that as an excuse. That's a red herring for them to say that, because they test them. There's no new sanctions put on them. And they'll test because they said there hasn't sanctions. We've had North Korea under sanctions since the Korean War. So, it's just one of those sort of things. They are committed to these weapons programs. They need to test to ensure that they are a credible threat for reliability purposes. They will use new sanctions as an excuse, but they're going to test regardless.
Peter, one of the side notes on this, and I find this for whatever reason interesting, and that is that on the same day that all of this is coming down, South Korea has decided to resume humanitarian aid to North Korea. And I guess what they do is they send over $8 million worth of assistance to help the kids and the pregnant women in North Korea. And so now the president of South Korea, the new president of South Korea, is under all kinds of heck fire from the opponents of the administration there in North Korea, saying that this is ill-timed and sends a mixed message. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, Look, there's issues here. I mean, and it's one of those sort of things. There's two sides to this coin. One is that I kind of the thought of Ronald Reagan during his presidency when he provided food aid to Ethiopia, which was suffering a famine, even though it was a socialist country aligned with the Soviet Union. And he said that starving people have no politics. The people of North Korea are a victim of the North Korean government. In a humanitarian gesture of this nature, like I said, it's that the people can use this in many ways to see it. One is that we're helping starving people that are the victims of their government. The other is that every time you give a bowl of food to a starving child or a pregnant woman in North Korea, that allows the government to give a soldier a bowl of food instead. So it's a very difficult issue in terms of morality, ethics, and of course national security because of the nature of North Korea. And this could we had this debate back during the Clinton administration when North Korea, you know, most of North Korea's famine and the food hunger comes from its self-imposed collective economy that they collectivist economy that they have, you know, communist collectivist economy. That's where it comes from. So, you know, it's self-imposed. And so people say, well, geez, you know, if they just change things, they could feed themselves. But in the same sense, they're not going to change. And you have these people. And of course, for the Koreans, this is one Korean people that have been separated for a long, long time. So there's a lot of ways to look at this thing. And people, it's kind of like a Rorschach inkblot test. But in the same, another way of looking at it, Dan, too, is that you're saying, you know, and the South Korean prime minister, I don't know if you saw the press conference, but he basically, you know, stood beside President Trump and said President Trump is doing the right thing. You know, it's also saying that, you know, we're keeping the door open to better relations.
Yes.
So in other words, even though we're going to be tough on you, we are always keeping the door open to diplomacy. So there's a lot of things. I'm not sure exactly what the South Korean president has decided here, but he was somebody who was very much for more engagement. When he was elected into office last December and took office this spring, that was his view. And President Trump actually criticized him for it a couple of times. So that was his desire. And I think that he's been mugged by reality in a certain sort of way. But you know, you have to remember, for the Koreans, this is one Korean people. And there are people there are people in the South who still have living relatives in the North that were separated by the war. So this is a very, you know, unique issue that it may be a little bit difficult for many Americans to understand.
Peter Brooks from the Heritage Foundation, Boston Herald, thank you very much for your analysis, as always. 1251 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandis Show.
I'm Pamela Furr. Coming up at 1 on WTN, the latest on the rescue efforts of a little girl in Mexico City. And you won't believe what the Navy is using to navigate some of its submarines.
Oh, I know.
It's all straight ahead on WTN.
Oh, fine. I'll let Pamela do it. 1258, Super Talk 99.7 WTN. That is one of the more fascinating stories, actually, that is coming out today. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to it. Pamela's going to do it for you. In the news at 1 o'clock here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Well, I think we've pretty much handled North Korea. Got a lot more coming up in the next hour, including the prominent NFL players who want the NFL to dedicate a month to social justice. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more straight ahead. Also, well, it seems to me anyway like the Obama administration, the former Obama administration, is being unmasked after all of the unmasking that they did. Details next on WTN.